like we're live. So what I'm going to start with, you know, when I talked to you a week or so ago, you sounded completely reinvigorated. I mean, mm-hmm. I hope this comes out right. You haven't sounded that good in a decade, you know? So explain to me what's been going on in your life the past few months that brought you to that point.
You know, it's all because of the pandemic in a way. It's one of the positive things that happened during the pandemic. I was able, because I was forced to be by myself and I was forced not to be able to work because you can meet clients, you can visit projects. I decided to come to Greece in order to weather this pandemic because at that point it was raging in the US. And in Greece, it was very, very much, much, much more mild. So I said, let me go. I was building a house anyway, which was going to be my summer home, just to come for vacation. So I had to come to supervise the finishing of the house. That was around July. So I had a ticket, a return ticket, to come back in September. It took me forever to be able to leave the U.S., but I was able to get a round trip ticket. By the time September came and the house was more or less finished, all hell had broken loose in the US. You couldn't go back because there were no flights. There were no, even to come here, I had to fight with airlines to get me here and I had to fight with the government to accept me. So I said, listen, I'll finish the house and then I'll get back to the US sometime towards the end of the year because the house was not finished, the theater. It's not the house. The theater was a very complex thing, and I will tell you more about it later.
Yeah, please.
So anyway, I decided around September, the writing was on the wall. I was not going to go back right away. I started feeling very comfortable here without the pressure from work, but also discovered that I can do work from wherever I am. I was still on the phone with Reva every day, and clients came to me. Clients for custom theaters. All of a sudden, I hadn't got a custom order for a year and a half, and I got two, and I explained to the clients, I don't have any plan to get back and stay for a long period of time in the US, but I want to get your theater done, so can we do it, can I do it from here?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they both accepted, both clients. So I said, put two and two together. What don't I like here? I love the climate. I can go out and be in the jacuzzi in the middle of December. I love that I don't have to get up in the morning and go to work. I love the quietness of the neighborhood. I live in an area where there used to be the old airport that they moved it to another location. That's going to be developed into one of the most amazing areas in Europe. It's a $7 billion project with golf courses, casinos, marinas, parks, and
You seem to have a talent for finding places right before they get flipped. The same thing happened in Brooklyn.
You
moved in
right
before Barclays happened.
It's by design. When I came here, I started looking for my summer house. I didn't have a clue that there is such an area, there's such a prospect of development. So when I started looking for a house, I love this area. It's called Glyfada in Athens, which is like the Beverly Hills of Athens. It's like 20 minutes from Athens, but it's very upscale, beautiful outdoor cafe. It's very friendly to walk, very green, and it's right next on the water. So when I started looking at the house, I wanted to look there. I started looking there, but it was very expensive. Not expensive compared to the U.S. You can get a spectacular, not 2 years ago, a spectacular two-bedroom apartment for like $800,000, even less possibly. And then I found out that this project is happening right next to Glyfada. So anyway, they said, take a look at the Ellinikon because this is an area that's going to go up. And I found this place, the second place that I saw, was this very good compound, like seven buildings. And one of them had an empty apartment, was never rented. The building was built in 2012. So this apartment was, it had floors, walls, but nothing much, no kitchen, no bathroom, but it had two features. Had this semi-basement, semi-sunken basement that was connected with the living room. And you can go down and there's windows. I mean, windows were a little high. But I said, that's a place for the theater. I don't want a theater in my house. I always like to feel like I'm leaving the house and go and see a movie. So I said, I'm gonna cover this big hall that takes up space, real estate from the living room. And there's an elevator that connects with the downstairs. Very finished, and it's, so I take the elevator and I'll develop the lower level as a theater with the lobby, with the foyer. So it's a full blown apartment, but it's mostly 2/3 of that is the theater, which I call it the Roxy, because I had a lettering from my old theater in Brooklyn.
Right.
And then, but that's the, that was probably the most inviting feature, that I can have a basement. But that house has a spectacular wraparound yard, and it's at the back of a big garden for the building, totally isolated. Nobody can come in into the garden. Mm-hmm. And it's 10,000 square feet. It was enormous. It was 3 times the size of my garden in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So that was magical. And I went to town, I illuminated like it's a landmark. I have 120 spotlights. Everything is hit by a light. At night, it's like you're in the Acropolis. Everything is ablaze with architectural lighting. And my lawyer said, even if you didn't find the house of your dream, you should never buy anything except that area, because in 2 years, they're going to bring this project. And sure enough, 5 months ago, they broke ground and they started building it. And I'm right at the border.
Right, right.
In the course of 1 year, the price of the property went from where I got it 4 times up, and it's going to go. So I'm not going anywhere. I love the place.
Yeah.
I decided that I love the U.S. I'll be coming down to see my colleagues and see Broadway shows, which I miss. But now I couldn't come anyway, so because there's nothing there. So there is nothing left in the U.S. except my archives. My TK Theater archives are at the warehouse where Steve Haas has his company. And I don't know what.
Oh, okay.
You have the history of home theater in these files.
Yeah.
And I had 40 people from Harvard that were now our teachers, and they did the plans. It's really a how to build a theater.
Yeah.
Photographs. I have the whole collection of George Correll photographs that I got from MGM. Negatives and prints, color renderings, hundreds and hundreds of tapes with interviews from Entertainment Tonight, Good Morning America, hundreds of articles from all over the world, Russia, China, Australia. They're sitting there. Tony Williams talked to the board of directors at the Museum of Modern Art to put at the architectural department. Mm-hmm. But because of COVID, nothing is happening. So I'm still waiting for a divine intervention to get this collection to someone.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, as a extreme contrast, the multiple yes that I got here. As soon as I came in, it started with me wanting to get rid of my laser collection. Laser, mm-hmm. disc collection is dead weight. But I said there's got to be a way to take advantage of the movies, because most of the movies are the A classics, from Citizen Kane to George Ford, to John Ford Westerns, to American movies, to Bergman, to Fellini, to Antonioni.
So approximately how many discs do you have?
5,000.
Wow, okay.
So what I did, someone introduced me to the Society of Greek Directors. I met with the president, very nice guy. We hit it off, and I said, here's what I would like to do. I would like to create and they're housed in a spectacular neoclassical building from the 18th century. They have a great theater, which is not really done properly. It's in the architecture of the house is fantastic, but they haven't done anything. So I volunteer to redesign it, to spruce it up. It's like a woman that's beautiful, but doesn't have any makeup to bring out. So that's what you need. And also I said, I will donate the collection. You give me a room. They gave me a room. The discs move there. They're already there. We're waiting for the lockdown, because we have a lockdown here for at least another 2 weeks, for months now. Mm-hmm. It's very tough here. It's to go and organize the collection. And people will come in and study movies. They're going to, the members, there are like 12,000 members. So I was so immediately, people were, I was approached by 10 people. Don't do it with them. Do it with them. Do it with them. Everybody wanted. I said, listen, we're going to spread the wealth on everybody. Let's get the laser disc to the film director. And then now that I started transferring all the movies on a hard drive, when I finish in a year, I'll donate my real collection, the Blu-rays, to one of the two foundations. One is the Onassis Foundation, and the other is the Niarchos Foundation, which has a spectacular center at the entrance of Athens. It's a sprawling compound with opera houses, with theme clubs, with gardens that rival all contemporary architecture, billions of dollars, and they are very big benefactors. So I'm trying to get to donate the collection there and create similar events that draw people to study movies. The problem that I have here, I don't know how to turn people down. So when I got so accepted here, I said, you know what? I belong here. I felt, having been away for 35 years, I came back to where I belong. I feel like, and I was never in the US. I came here and I feel like I'm suddenly, that's my life. That's where I want to continue to live, and that's when I want to continue to enjoy the great weather, the hospitality, the great food, and combining all this with my passion for movies. They're very passionate about film here. It's just like amazing. In the US, wherever you find someone, they're mostly talking about superheroes. Nobody was.
Younger
people, the ones that are contaminated by the Hollywood culture, up until 20, they will watch it. But then you found out, you talk to people, and they bring up directors that you don't even know. So I find some of the movies on Amazon, others I order, and I just open up and I tell them about movies that I like. Joanna Hogg's my favorite British director. They love it, and it becomes an exchange of information. And in a culture that's cinephile to the extreme. I cannot tell you how many people like that I have met. So there is no point in being isolated in Brooklyn, where here I live and breathe my culture, with the epicenter being the movies. So that brainwashing got into my head, and I said, listen, I flip it. Instead of coming here for the summer and go to the US to spend the rest of the year, I'll come here to live, and I go back to the US.
Yeah.
Maybe there is a project to check it out. But no, look at that. We're talking in Zoom.
Yeah, you really lucked out, because the whole world's used to working like this now. Whereas 6-7 months ago, they would have said, we
want
you there.
It was impossible. No, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
They're doing it. So this is the benefit among all the tragedies that happen and the distraction. To me, it's been a bunch, because I don't feel closed up.
Yeah,
I have windows with gardens all around. Take a walk by the beach. People are swimming. And at night, when 8 o'clock comes, I go down the theater. The theater took forever to finish because it's very sophisticated and equestrian. It's total automation. And it took forever to do the lighting to work, the automation to work. But slowly, slowly, it's something that people go in.
So,
and they say, wow.
What did you do to evolve it from what you had in Brooklyn?
It is a much more sophisticated processor. It's a 36-channel Trinov processor.
Nice.
And I talked to the guys at Trinov. Says, you know, can you mention in your web, or can we mention our web that you're using a Trinov? By all means, I said, give me something that I can afford. I'll go up in the roof and announce to the world that I'm using Trinov. It was very finicky. It was a finicky product, but they made it work. They sent someone from England to calibrate it. They sent an expert from Barco to calibrate the projector. I made the 3D work. What's different than the other theater is that it's full-blown Dolby Digital Atmos. I did a ceiling system. The other thing, that it's much taller. It's not wider than the Roxy, but it's taller. And I don't know how to explain the feeling of height that doesn't suppress you, makes it feel like it's a real theater.
Right.
And the thing that I never worked at Roxy is that the curtain had broken down. I never replaced it. But in my mind, I always want to have the Radio City Music Hall curtain, the curtain that when it's down, it looks like a regular curtain. And when it goes up, it has small scallops. Mm-hmm. So I found a woman and we experimented for a month, bought spare fabric and we made it work. And now it's one of the features. It's just spectacular. As you saw in the place, the lights go from the floor to the ceiling,
right.
And the light radiates and changes. Other than that, I have the same equipment. I have the same chairs, the Cinematheque seats, the same screen, the ViewTech, which looks bigger because it goes from one end of the wall to the other, which is the reason I had the curtain. I didn't have any space to retract the curtain, nothing. So the only way it could go would be up. And that became a feature.
Okay. I've got one question because I want to talk about your outdoor theater because that's important. Mm-hmm. But with the home theater, we've talked about this before, but I think it's important to go back to this. You prefer a very clean, modern aesthetic, even though you're known for doing more opulent spaces.
Absolutely. I would suffocate in an ornate theater at this point in my life.
Is that just because you're easily distracted or you just want something that really focuses on the movies?
My whole lifestyle has changed and my whole aesthetic is more of a minimal, streamlined, clean perspective. That is in my house. I don't need I don't need color. Everything is gray. If there is color, it's from the lighting. And I just don't need clutter. I don't want clutter. I want something that excites you with a streamlined minimalism, introduce you to the ambience of the theater, but doesn't become a focal point. So it's my change perspective. I did theaters for years and years that were imitations of old movie theaters. And then I started hating the old movie theaters because I realized they were all kitschy. I sensed that, everything was copied from a European original and it was a mishmash. It was, of course, working because the passion of the architects to copy something from Europe because they really admired it somehow transcended the kitschiness and gave it a different type of interest. So I don't criticize it, but I analyze it. It's just when you first look at it, it's imposing because you have so much detail. You don't know what to look first. And then on second look, after you live with it, and I lived with it by studying all these theaters for years, it's like it's everything but the kitchen sink in these theaters. You find 20 influences, Japanese influence, Chinese influence, Art Deco, all coexisting happily in a mishmash of cultures. So I did it, and I'm guilty because I thrived. And the only thing that I didn't do, I didn't mix styles. If I was doing deco, it was deco. If it was French, I tried at least to stay consistent to a style. But even that, after I sold the house in 894 Union Street, which was a very old Victorian and was my first theater, it had too much detail, a lot of millwork and carvings. That's when I started turning the curve and I said, I want something much simpler in my life. Not dark, not ornate, not too colorful, clean. Mm-hmm. So this is why I like clean, contemporary, but with a twist. It cannot be a box because there's nothing creative about a box.
Right.
You have to find a way to give it interest, the visual interest.
Okay, I wanted to talk about the outdoor space, if that's okay. Because doesn't that, and I could be getting this completely wrong, but it kind of brings your life story full circle, because
100%.
Yeah. So give people some context for that, and then what you've done with that space.
When I first tackled home theater, I was too young. I was 7 years old, and I almost burnt the room because I tried to deal with the celluloid, which was nitrate, and illuminate with a candle, and caught fire. And my father beat me up to the point that I never forgot it. But around 13 years of age, I just got the urge to do what really was my main attraction, going to the theater, sub open air theater. I would go with my friend Yorgos Koras, who became also a director, and would find out of the way neighborhood theaters. There were 400 theaters in the area. Now they're not even 20. They all closed. But back then it was the way to entertain. And I would find Funny Face playing in Piraeus, and I would take two trains to go there. And just the ambience of watching a movie with the star above, with the stars, and jasmine, that smelled so divinely. I still go pass by theaters that are abandoned, and I look at that, my heart skips a beat. So I wanted an open air theater. So I said, I have a whole back area of the garden, secluded, there's no buildings, why don't I turn it into a theater? And of course, I want to bring it a full circle. When I was 13, I turned my terrace of the building where this guy now has his office into an open air theater. And I want to make it open theaters. At this point, open air theater was like for the masses. They were very cheap and they were low class, but in a very endearing way. Everything was cheap, cheap chairs, real plants, but you didn't have to be rich to go. It wasn't the opera. It wasn't the legitimate theater. It was an open air theater that everybody could go with a half a drachma to go in. So I wanted my theater to have this ambient, potted plants, structured seats, and I called it Cine. All the theaters called Cine at the beginning. Cine Apollo, Cine Orpheum, Cine Palace. Mine was Cine Katinaki. Katinaki is the name of a maid, probably, a low-class girl. Katina, when someone is wearing fancy clothes but vulgar, they call this woman a Katina. It's like a nickname. It's like low-class. And
right.
So Katinaki is a diminutive of Katina, even more low-class than Katina. So I call it Katinaki, little Katina, like Katina Paxinou, that was her name.
Okay.
So I wanted this theater to have that kind of connection with that popular culture, that the epicenter of which was the movies, going to see movies. So anyway, when I got the space, it took me a month to figure out that this has to be Cine Katinaki. It's the reincarnation of my first theater. And the theater is widescreen, 1 to 235.
How big is the screen?
It's 14 feet.
Okay.
Actual, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yes, 18 seats. And I painted. It was a very massive structure, but the screen is floating with plants all around. And I painted with white paint, but that's not good. So just 2 days ago, now that I'm going to spruce it up for the spring, I bought screen goo from England, which is $600 for 2 liters of paint. It's outrageously expensive, but supposedly brings out the contrast of the movie. So I repaint it because it got, although it's waterproof drywall, it's for outdoors use, and it was sanded. That's a little crack. So every spring, I will have to refurbish it.
Right.
So that you could say, but that's not a big deal. I got spectacular chairs, and there are tables. In between the chairs, there are tables, because that's what you do in a theater. You order a drink, you put it on the table. And each table has a vase with basil, because it smells. It's a sensory thing.
Nice.
So every table has a basil, and then the jasmine.
Oh, how are you doing the speakers? What's your audio sound?
It's under the screen, has four clips. Big speakers, white, so the blank with the wall, the cover with the plants. It's a front, left, right, and a big subwoofer all on the front. And at the very back, just like outside where I'm talking to you, it's two big surrounds.
Okay.
Nothing fancy. You get 5.1 sound, but I can't use it for big oral extravaganzas because that sound travels and the neighbors.
Oh, sure.
Like, I invite them so I can shut them up. They don't complain. But it's usually for lighthearted entertainment in the summer all Hollywood classics that don't have a big sound, that it's paradise. I said the first movie that I said was Schlesinger's Darling. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. You have Julie Christie, and it was a full moon that night, right above the screen.
Nice. Let's talk about your collection. Mm-hmm. You archive. You've been for years trying to archive your disc collection.
It's happening. I got NAS drives, and I thought by getting 8 NAS drives of 16 terabytes each, I would copy my collection. I ran out of space 3 weeks into starting digitizing. So now I'm waiting a Dell processor and another was Synology. That it's an extension of Kaleidoscape. What Kaleidoscape is the main unit where you burn the discs. I have DVD burners because I want to do 6 movies at a time.
Right.
And I have an unlimited extension without having to get something from the cloud. Because although the quality right now on Kaleidoscape is bit by bit, if you whether you get on the cloud or this, all my old movies are not, you can download them. You can go and buy them. They all exist on DVD. So these movies are being transferred into the hard drive. And eventually I'll have all my collection. I calculated. Right now I have 2,500 movies, about 6,000 Blu-rays. I'll do the Blu-rays. I will have them ready by the end of the year. I ran out of space and I ordered some drives from Germany. And then the DVDs. The DVDs are 9,000 on top of that. But they record very quickly. It takes only 6 minutes. They don't take 40 minutes, which is the Blu-rays and 4Ks or the 3Ds. So I will transfer them. And once I transfer them, I will keep the box sets, but mostly for the graphics, and I'll donate the collection in its entirety to one of these big institutions here. Unfortunately, I've spent $7,000 for storage because everything now is much better organized than the US. It's all in a vault with humidification and behind glasses. It's really very well protected. But I need to cut that cord from having to play a DVD. I'll keep buying DVDs because what's happening, so many old Technicolor movies are coming out with a vengeance. You would imagine
I
saw 2 months ago, the Harvey Girls came out. I've never seen in my life anything like it. It's the original nitrate negative. It has sharpness that you don't usually associate with old movies. You see old movies in a little kind of course, more contemporary movies as ever. This one beats the pants of any contemporary movie, not to mention the color, the blacks. And it was the beginning. And month after month, new things coming out. 2 days ago, I said Minelli's The Pirate, which is blows you away. The color. Blu-ray movies that were done 4 years ago, you don't want to watch them. Bandwagon, a great movie.
Yeah, I would love to see that done right.
They don't have the technology back then. They have to redo it.
Yeah.
It's like moving from Blu-ray to 4K with these transfers. So the movie that got me involved with loving movies was Showboat. Not the original 36, but the 52 version. Just came out. A friend of mine called me and he says he watched the movie after and he was crying. He never thought this movie existed in that format. I ordered it right away. I don't order things from the US because the taxes are incredible. I get everything from Amazon Europe, Amazon England, Amazon Italy, France. So I'm saying all these movies are coming out and every month they announce what's going to happen next month. I know they did Pajama Game and Damn Yankees from the original, but the true revelation is the Inspector General, which is not an MGM movie with Danny Kaye.
Yeah.
They got archival negatives. Your eyes pop out watching this movie, which was always a public domain movie. It existed in, I bought it high definition, but supposedly from Amazon, and I played it after I saw the disc. It's day and night. So right now, everybody's moving to streaming, But for those that truly appreciate Conti, there is only one way: to see it on a recorded format. Because these movies, even if they're available from streaming, and they're available, you can see Court Jester from Apple, you can see it from Amazon. Nothing compared to the transfer on DVD. Yeah. Eventually, maybe they use that transfer. I don't know. But right now, if you want to be the first one to enjoy a movie like it used to be, you have to watch what Kino Lorber is doing, Paramount is doing, MGM, Warner Brothers is the best. Even Kino Lorber, the transfer of Kino Lorber are great, black and white. The colors are good, but not as great as the MGM.
This is a different interview we have to have another day. It's just, mm-hmm. Now that we can do stuff in 4K HDR, it can make a film look amazing, or it can reveal all the flaws of the elements they have to work with.
It makes it amazing. I'll answer your question right away. The only flaws are badly printed prints from all Technicolor negatives. They have three negatives. Yeah. The plague of three Technicolor is bad registration. When it's not registered perfectly, you see pink highlight outlines from people. It's not good. Only close-ups are good in Technicolor. If we go a little bit further and there's much more information, it becomes blurry. But when you do a great transfer, it brings out the incredible precision of that system that you don't. Today's movie are monochromatic, gray, digital, which doesn't have the depth of Technicolor. Go and see what Soderbergh did that interview. Oh, no, it was a movie that was film to film. It was a documentary that compared Scorsese, wasn't it?
Right, right.
What you can replicate the depth, yet it will be eventually. So when you allow, you find a way to transfer properly with the current 4K transfers that would do, even if it doesn't print in 4K, you get an amazing result. And I tell you, an incredibly master 4K Blu-ray disc versus a 4K, you're going to be hard-pressed to see much of a difference.
Okay.
When I saw these 4 or 5 discs that came out literally the last 4 months, and they advertised it, straight 4K restoration from the archival negative, not from Elements, mm-hmm. which means positive.
Right.
I can't imagine. I watched Harvey Girls, and I watched Tenet in 4K. Harvey Girls beats the pants of Tenet. And we're talking about Chris Nolan, who is particularly very focused in picture quality.
Is there anything else you think we should discuss about your current situation?
No, I just enjoy the freedom of archiving my movies, watching my movies instead of just putting them on alphabetical order, and waking up in the morning and jogging and casually finally finish the details of the theater. We had a lot of problems with Trinov because there is an issue with how DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks are encoded. When you try to transfer information from a disc through Trinov to play it on the screen, what they call the handshake, the studios have made it very difficult to copy a disc onto a hard drive. So every time you transfer a movie, you turn off the disc, the Trinov, and you want to transfer another one, the Trinov doesn't work. The projector doesn't work. Studios have created booby traps to stop you from doing it. So we found a way. We never turn off the Trinov. We turn off the projector and we turn off the sources, but the Trinov doesn't have to jump start again. So the first handshake allows you to continue to rip movies without being tripped by the encoding of the movies. It happens, but it is just like hit and miss. So that is developing and finding ways to solve these problems every day. All of these things that are very natural as you develop the theater so that you can actually push a button every single time it works. I learned a lot about automation. Everybody, every client wants to press a button and the movie starts. That is not happening. It doesn't happen because you don't know when the movie is coded to start. You don't know how if you want to turn the lights first, and start a movie or start a movie and then turn the lights. The only way to do it, I found out, is to have separate remote for the movie, separate remote for the lights, and separate remote for the curtain. So if you want to start a movie, you start the curtain that takes more time to go down. And when a curtain is halfway through, you start the movie and then you dim the lights. So I learned that total automation, one push button doesn't work. And I advise my clients to avoid, try to automate, because it's a futile pursuit. Every movie is recorded differently. You cannot dim the lights and suddenly you have to go to the main menu and you have to navigate, turn on subtitles. It breaks the mood. You have to deal with FBI warnings. So what I do, I start the movie, I pause it at the MGM logo, I go to the theater when I have friends. When I'm by myself, I don't do it. And then I open the curtain and dim the lights and press the button for the movie to start, and it's magic. It happens, but it needs 3 buttons.
So I'm gonna stop recording, and then I wanted to just ask you a couple things real quick. Mm-hmm. So hang on 1 second.